out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 5th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. It's Wednesday, we're halfway through the week and that means we must have with us revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Well, good morning, Sven. I'm doing very well, thank you.
That's good to hear. And there's been lots going on this week, lots that we can get into, both from a British side of things and from an American side of things, with Donald Trump's visit to the Queen. And just before I hand it over to you, I do think that the Queen must have really, really enjoyed this. When you think about the rabble that was sent over there last time and the terrible effect that they had on Prince Harry. I mean, look at how he's gone downhill since then. It must be an absolute breath of fresh air for the Queen to have Donald Trump there and the beautiful First Lady. And they certainly seem to be getting on. I've seen lots of glints and smiles in the Queen's eye, and Donald Trump is acting the perfect gentleman. Theresa May, the only time she's actually looked any good is when she's been alongside Donald Trump. First time when he sort of held her hand, and when they did that press conference last time, you could see that she just wishes that she could be more like him. I think it's all gone very well. Anyway, what are your views on it so far?
Well, yes, I agree, and that's really interesting to hear what you have to say about that, about the Queen especially. And I didn't quite understand when you said the rabble that was here before. Are you talking about the previous president?
I am, yes, indeed. The Monkey King.
Well, I thought they all loved him over there, even in the royal family. I thought they were quite entranced.
Think about the effect he had. Look at who Prince Harry's ended up married to.
We can blame that on Obama, I guess. That's all right with me. Yes, I know. And you know, I don't want to get off track here, but since you brought that up, I think it's good she stayed away. And before I get into what I was going to say, this is a nasty comment against Trump. It's just so typical of what they do to him. You know, I'm more of a supporter of Trump because of how he's treated. Because I think I would be maybe if he wasn't treated so badly by the media. He's certainly bringing out, and you have to give him a lot of credit for calling it fake media, fake news, and so on, and causing more and more fake news all the time. But, you know, it's true that he's used that word nasty before. It just is in his vocabulary. And so when he used it against Meghan Markle, not against her, but in response to being told, told what she had said about him in the past, and he was really saying that he didn't know that she made those nasty comments, and that's clear. That's what he meant. You know, all these people speak. You have to put the whole thing in context. You know what?
That was a great response to it.
Repeat every word. What?
I think that was a great response to it, actually, to say, well, those were nasty comments, weren't they?
Yeah. So then they, they've tried to attack him with this and get the royal family upset and get Harry upset and so on. But she is probably too outspoken and independent for her position within the royal family. And therefore, I don't know, I kind of hope they have a little trouble with her in the future. But, you know, that's maybe will happen and maybe won't. But anyway, she stayed away, which is a good idea.
They already are. They do. The Queen has said that she's going to send them off to Botswana for 4 years. And she's banned Meghan Markle from wearing any of the Queen's jewellery. And apparently, lots of fallings out.
She shouldn't. I mean, he's not heir to the throne. He's quite kind of a long way off, and he has no chance of getting there. They were getting so much attention in the press, Meghan and Harry, and then, of course, waiting for the baby, and now the baby came and all that. And then I noticed that after that, there was a concerted effort to push forward Kate and William again and their children and downplay, you know, and quit putting so much attention on the second tier people. So I guess, you know, I think that was really orchestrated by the UK government and so on. It was, had to have been, to quit, you know, it's just these people. The people are so stupid. It's really pathetic how white Europeans are, the younger generation and so on. They just want this kind of celebrity stuff. And they fall in love with someone like Meghan Markle. And then they just want to read and see and follow and, you know, become these little fans and so on. And it's too bad we don't have more judicious people amongst us. That's why I think we're in the big trouble that we're in. And they're of course being fed all that stuff. But
people are too frightened to criticize her. To be honest, because of this race thing as well, we still haven't seen the baby. But it was great idea of them to just keep her away, I think, because they've been having dinner with Prince Charles and Camilla. I think William and Kate have been there. Trump's whole family have been there. And they just look like they're all getting on absolutely splendidly. And RT have tried to say, oh, look at these gaffes that Trump made. He didn't shake her hand quite properly. And that was about it. That was all they could find. Haven't seen any gaffes. It's just looked wonderful to me all the way through. So far.
Trump, especially that opening scene that they always have the guards at the Buckingham Palace, and they do their impressive marching thing, and the band, they have a wonderful band. Everything they play sounds so good, and they're playing all these really kind of nice musical renditions of songs that that kind of honor the United States. And there's Trump going along with looking at the guards and all and chatting with them, and he looks just fine. And of course, I have to say that Melania, I just think she is so perfect, and she does so well, and they don't give her any credit at all. You know, it's just amazing that she has never been on the cover of a magazine in this country. And all this time she's been, and she's so photogenic. I mean, she may have been on some cover somewhere, but not on, you know, a major one where they had Michelle Obama all the time or other first ladies. They just mistreat her so much, and yet she behaves herself so impressively, and she's so above it all, and yet she's very warm and kind, and she looked great. I love to follow her, you know, as a female. I've always, you know, liked fashionable looks in women, and she just is so perfect for that, her figure and all, and she just looks great in everything. You know, I don't think that they have to buy all those clothes either. They give you the price of them, but I think they're offered to, like a first lady like her to wear, you know, to give them and then they talk about the designer and so on and where you can buy it. And then they get that, advertising. So I don't think we have to worry. It doesn't matter because, it wouldn't be costing the country, I guess, but we don't have to worry about the cost of the clothes that she wears. And they're not generally astronomical. So I just think that's a lot of fun for people like me to watch her. So, but just to get a little more serious here, oh, you brought up Camilla and Charles. And, you know, I read yesterday, I saw this thing that Camilla and her wink. Did you see that?
No, Camilla's, I didn't.
And then they treated it so, so nicely, you know. They just called it Cheeky Camilla in this one news story. And it was when the Trumps came to their Clarendon house or whatever, I guess if that's it, where they live. For some tea, for tea, and then they posed for photographs, and then they were walking out to have tea, and the two men were leading the way, of course, and then Camilla and Melania were going to follow, but as they were walking away, Camilla turned to the photographers. And the press there that was not visible and winked, made a very clear wink with a smile on her face, kind of a making fun of, you know.
Cheeky wink. Cheeky
yeah,
wink.
Yeah, so they called it cheeky. And then somewhere else they said, Camilla is having fun with the press. And, you know, if Melania or anybody, any American or Trump or any of his kids or anything had done anything like that ever when he was meeting with leaders of another country. And such an important leader, you can't deny, is the president of the United States. You know, it would be a big news and a big scandal, and they never stopped talking about it. But they have not made anything big out of that. And I thought that was a terrible thing on her part to do. It was clear that she was like, well, because Charles and Trump were like walking side by side, like good, you know, getting along fine. And she's like winking, like saying, well, this is all a big false, you know, this is all fake, you know, something like that. That's the way it clearly looked. And Melania standing right there where she winked with her other eye. So Melania wouldn't have seen it. But it was there. It's there on film. And it's a very clear cut wink. She's good at winking.
That's not very respectful. That's not very respectful. I'm surprised at that.
No.
Yeah, that surprises
Well,
me.
I am too. She should know better than that. I think she couldn't help herself. You know, I think they hate the Trumps so much, really. She does.
Do
and
you think?
Probably and Charles doesn't like him either because they're so liberal. And they were going to talk about climate change, something like that.
Oh, right.
Have
right.
a good frank talk about it, but I don't know if they did.
Yeah, that could be it, because it does seem to me as if the Queen likes him. Queen, I think, definitely likes him because he's got so much respect.
I think she's fine.
He's got so much respect for royalty, and he's a real Anglophile, and I think that really shows.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Definitely. So let's get into that. He's probably too much of an Anglophile for me.
Yeah, for his own good.
I'm not that much of an Anglophile. And so when he gets on this and the special relationship and it's not, of course, he talks great about whatever leader he's speaking with, you know, that's being recorded and so on. He always talks about the great relationship that they have with them, you know, that America has with this country and so on. Oh, and so that's his style, and that's part of his politics. I think he really means it. He's got this love, this admiration for British, whatever you'd call it, that British magic, and that his mother had, and that so many people had. And this is what I'm taking away from it, that that Britain is able to snow to affect and get everybody, all other peoples, to like them. They're so good at their pomp and circumstance, and they're presenting themselves. They come across as so likable and so reliable and dependable and important and valiant and so on. in spite of the fact that they've deceived people, other countries and other peoples throughout history in order to get them to support the British goals, and they're so much weaker now, and yet they're still able to do that. And of course, that royal family is magic. It's been functioning very well lately, in the, you know, this new generation. And so that's a big part of how they charm the world. And so I have my criticisms of the special relationship, because it started really with the world wars and World War I. We always had a relationship, the U.S. and Britain, but the U.S. was more independent. And then Britain worked very hard to get the United States into World War I. And you know, I've done all that work lately on that area, so I'm sensitive to that. And so they called it the special relationship, I think, then. That's when that term started. And it's been used ever since, and through World War II. And what I want to say is that this kind of talk and this relationship discourages, from the American side, it discourages historical revisionism, which is my big thing. And it reinforces, from both sides, as they were talking in that press conference this morning, reinforces the lies that are there to protect both countries, but I think mainly to protect Britain, but to a lesser extent, it protects the United States too. I don't think they need to feel as protected about those wars as Britain does. But you know, when they start in with that, I can't listen to it. I just have to, I either turn it off, or I just shut my mind down and just think about something. You know, it just offends me so much when they start talking about the war, and that they've been doing that, because this meeting is prior to the 70th anniversary of D-Day.
About this special relationship. I mean, it is really unfortunate that that's what it's become about. But I think there is a special relationship between Britain and America. Both speak in English. America was started off by English settlers, so it was English people that started it off. That's the real special relationship, but that doesn't get talked about. It's just all about this. It's become all about the last two world wars and covering up for what really went on there and the dreadful war crimes carried out by Britain and America and Russia. And it covers that up. And nobody talks about the fact that, most of America is part of the same family as Britain. That's what the special relationship is. It's because we're both white and we both speak English. And we both originally, it started off with British settlers.
I agree with you that that's a special relationship, but they've changed it. You see, they've changed it into, they never thought of it that way, because, American Revolutionary War, they fought against Britain, and it was a very bloody and painful war. And they won their independence, and Britain was no friend of the United States for a long time. France was a friend, and who else was, they considered friends, but not Britain. But, eventually, that changed itself. And even before World War I, it was, different. But that's when I think the talk about a special relationship started. And in any case, this is what they bring up today when they talk about it. They always bring it up. Not only today in before D-Day, but all the time, they'll bring up the world wars and how they fought side by side and all the men that died. And then what bugs me so much is they will say, or the media says, and sometimes the politicians say, that they prevented destruction, world destruction, from the Nazis or from the Germans in World War One, from the Kaiser and so on, by the fighting that they did together, you know, and so on, which is just false. And they play up that Nazi thing and the German guilt and all. And Germany, of course, doesn't object. They go along with it. And so they can get away with all that. Everybody agrees. Yes, yes, that's the way it was. I think, from my perspective, you know, this is the biggest problem of all, other than, of course, the immigration into our countries. But I certainly agree with you that the U.S. was an English colony and it was English people, and I'd be quite happy if it just returned to that, actually.
It's central, isn't it? It's central to the New World Order. It's central to everything. They have to bring the war into it all the time. When Theresa May, when she was giving her resignation speech, I think it was last week, she had to bring the Holocaust into it, and how she was talking to a Holocaust survivor that advised her and gave her inspiration, and she has to bring that in. When Donald Trump did his speech to the nation a while back, he had to bring in the Holocaust survivors. I think he actually had some of them there with him. I mean, it's absolutely central, and it's the same with Russia. You know, Putin brings it up as well. They just had their big parades over there on Red Square, and they've got all the all the veterans from the war that are still there. It's absolutely central because it forms the, you know, we must never allow nationalism to take hold again, because that will happen. I think that's the point of it. That's why they try to keep it alive all the time. Do you think?
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. And now, what you just said brought to my mind that, and now here's Trump, who says he's a nationalist, who says he's not an internationalist, says he's America first. And yet, he's kind of been forced as president of the U.S., you know, and all that goes along with that, to embrace the agreements and treaties and relationships we have with Europe and Britain, so which is good. I mean, we should. We're all white. We're supposed to be white, and so we should work together. So it's kind of, so now he gets into of course the U.S. narrative is all based on that now too, on the world wars and how we defeated this terrible, terrible enemy, which was a white country, you know, and now we're multicultural, racial countries, and that's strongly defended by our leaders, including Donald Trump, and by the royal families and so on. So in Europe and Britain, so it's so entrenched. And now they bring up fairly often, you know, they'll, in their talks and toasts and so on, it'll come out that that by our great heroics in World War II, we formed these new world organizations, and we started, and you know, we began the new world order. They'll even use those words, this now has to be defended, and we work on this together, and so on. What World War II was all about was the current world order that we have, and Trump has criticized it, but at the same time, he's forced to defend it. So he's really in a bad position. And the only time I feel like he is truly hypocritical is when it comes to stuff like this. In this visit,
he has spoken about immigration quite a lot, and I think that's good. And he seems to do that more when he's in Britain than anywhere else. They'll ask him questions, and he'll bring up immigration and say that, you know, it has to stop. Like he said, the Brexit vote was all about immigration, and immigration must stop. The immigration to Britain must stop, otherwise we'll lose our identity. And he seems to get that bit, but he doesn't quite understand that is part of that globalist New World Order that he's trying, that he's upholding at the same time.
I don't think that he doesn't understand. It just kind of gelled in my mind that he is... He has to go along with the general American narrative and so on. He's president. He can't just suddenly, you know, talk out of a different playbook altogether. But at the same time, he really is serious about this immigration. And I think he is a friend to white people. People say they want to say, oh, he's a plant. He's there to destroy everything. You know, I don't think so. I think he wants to keep our countries as much the way they are as possible. But,
And he sees so Jews as white.
He's talking out of both sides of his mouth is what he's doing. And not because he's dishonest, but because he's trying to get that, what you just said, in there. At the same time, he has to defend American traditions.
Yeah, he thinks that Jews are white. So he sees them as part of it. So he stands up for Israel. I mean, his daughter's married to a Jew. So he stands up for Israel, and he sees that as the same as standing up for Europe. And Europeans, I think that's the way it works.
Yeah, that's my view. He doesn't see Jews as alien. He sees Jews as part of Western civilization, and he goes along with the Judeo-Christian religion, idea that we're Judeo-Christian culture. So he doesn't exclude Jews, and that made it easy for him because he grew up in New York. His father in the real estate business. And so, he had to get along with Jews, or you do better if you get along with Jews. So he always got along with Jews, and he just has nothing. I don't think he's any at all racist, but he still recognizes that he's white, and he doesn't want white people to, he knows that white people run things better. He knows the truth about race, but you can't say it. So, this is the way it goes. He's not dishonest, but he's got to be pragmatic.
He's had a good spat with the mayor of London. I mean, he's made Sadiq Khan look really, really foolish. And Sadiq Khan was calling him, a fascist. And he was calling Farage a fascist in the newspapers last weekend. And just as the plane touched down, Air Force One, just as it touched down, he sent out a tweet mocking Sadiq Khan, talking about the huge crime rate and how he's a failed mayor, a stone cold loser, and how he should be concentrating on the crime in London rather than foreign diplomacy, basically. And Jacob Rees-Mogg stood up for him as well. Jacob Rees-Mogg said Donald Trump was absolutely right to defend himself. And Sadiq Khan is a failed mayor. And all you have to do is ask one of the London policemen about that to see what an absolute failure he is. And I think that played really well for him as well, because I think Trump's base were hoping he would do something like that. I mean, it was great to see that. And of course, the BBC, they didn't like it very much. But he's come out on top from that. And this press conference that he did as well, I think he came out really well in that as well. He's just come out shining from this trip. And there's been protests against him. There's been that horrible Trump baby balloon. They've had that floating in the sky. A robot sat on a toilet. And these people that go along to that, they just look ridiculous. They interview them and they say, oh, Donald Trump is this terrible racist. And look at the way that he treats non-whites. And you think, well, no, actually, he's increased black employment. He hasn't increased it for whites, but he has for blacks. You know, these people that are protesting him, they have no idea what they're protesting about.
No, that's right. And, I think it's pathetic and it's really sad to watch how, and these are white people, white Britons or in the United States, white Americans, white Europeans out there haranguing and protesting against Trump and saying the most ridiculous things. Of course, they're not criticizing him for his pro-Jewish positions. They're criticizing him as a racist and a dictator. Now, one of the things that Sadiq Khan said about Trump that I thought was the worst was that he said, he likened Trump's policies to that, again, back to World War II, the actions of European dictators of the 1930s and 40s. Now, that's a pretty, if you want to think about it, that's a pretty radical, terrible thing to say about the American president. And so, and yet, you know, all I read, I don't read much of that positive stuff that you're talking about. I read that, you know, he's highly criticized for that. But I mean, Trump, he's not criticized for that, while Trump is criticized for pointing out the facts. Of course, you can say they're both facts, but, you know, pointing out what a bad mayor Khan is, and then he should be paying attention to being mayor instead of what he's doing. And yet, Khan says things like this, and Trump is supposed to just stay quiet and be above it. You know, why is
it was in a major newspaper. No. It was in a major newspaper that Khan wrote all that. A major newspaper.
Yes.
That was just, oh, that's okay. He can do that. But Trump, we're going to criticize him if he responds to it. That's what I say. I think the media just make themselves look such fools the way that they cover this. Oh, another thing they did, they showed the approval rating and they beamed this onto a block of flats, and it had UK approval rating for Obama, and it was something like 80%. UK approval rating for Donald Trump, something like 25%. And I thought, so what? So what? It's the approval rating in America that matters. He doesn't care what his approval rating is in Britain. Right. I mean, if Obama had a good approval rating in Britain and a terrible one in America, he'd be, you know, what a terrible president he would be. It's so ridiculous. I think his approval rating, he said, was something like 95% in the Republican Party. Best approval rating ever.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, really, when you think about it.
Well, no, I agree. I agree with that. I thought the same thing. You know, and this is what they do. They act like if the rest of the world doesn't like Donald Trump, or the people, they've got groups of people out there protesting against him, that means we in America should be all upset, you know, and what kind of a president have we got? He's not popular around the world. And they did that with Obama, because he was seeming to be popular around the world, and they made that like, oh, that's what's so important. You know, our president is loved around the world. Oh, they've done that in Germany to control things there. They'll say, well, our German leaders, it all depends on what the rest of the world thinks of them, to keep them in line with the World War II narrative, you know, and not go astray. They don't want anybody who's popular with Germans, but the rest of the world is saying, hey, you're not sticking with our scenario here. You're not sticking with our narrative. What's wrong with you? You're scaring us. You're going to become, fascist again. Well, maybe the German people want somebody a little bit more like that. That could be, but they don't let that happen. And so when I blame the people in these countries, like saying, what's wrong with all these white Britons that they're out there in the streets with these blimps and everything and attacking the president of the United States, when the United States is so important to their country? Do they think that they are, you know, independent of and above and beyond the USA? They don't need it. They can just, you know, some of them talk like that. They say, we don't want this man in our country. He should get out. Like they're saying, we're too good for him. You know, Britain is too good for him, and the British royalty are too good for that horrible Donald Trump. You know, he shouldn't be here. But I think you're right. It's the media that is, that plays this up. This really is the media narrative, not so much the people. If the media was honest, they wouldn't have stories like this.
Yeah, they're totally brainwashed by it. Mm-hmm. Totally brainwashed by it. You can tell by the sound bites that they come out with when they were asked questions. It's just literally just repeating what they've read in the news. Anyway, Carolyn, thanks very much for that. That's been a great discussion we've had here. I'm sure listeners are going to enjoy that. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.